Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Healthy Baby Boomers Network Blog Talk Radio Show. I have a question for you. Have you ever wondered what it might be like to walk between two worlds, the daily world as most of us know it, and the multidimensional spiritual world that exists for those who actually pierce the veil? Stay tuned. I'm your host, Dr. Erica Goodstone, licensed mental health counselor, healing through love relationship healer, somatic body psychotherapist, and health and wellness coach, helping men and women heal their bodies and their relationships through love. Author of the Love Me, Touch Me, Heal Me, and Love in the Blizzard of Life book series, and Love Lessons for Your Soul. This show is all about living your dreams, fulfilling your life purpose, and creating and sustaining love and health and total well-being for the rest of your life, no matter what age you are right now. And in every episode, I speak with vibrant, exciting, and positive men and women who just keep proving that life can and often does get better and better as we reach our 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, and beyond. Raised in poverty, with alcoholism, terror, and repeated rape at around 6 years old, Athena Demetrios repressed the memories for over 30 years, not knowing why she kept feeling underlying rage and why she struggled with self-destructive love relationships and even suicidal thoughts. As a teen, she had a glimpse into other worlds, seeing her father in her bedroom doorway on the night after his burial. In Athena's darkest hours, the teachings of Saint Germain awakened her to the higher laws of the universe. And then she began to be guided by a being she calls her mystical muse. Athena explored both earthly and cosmic mysteries while developing her skills as a highly successful and in-demand makeup artist for film, TV, and commercials. So I'm delighted to welcome you today, Athena Demetrios.
Thank you so much. I just really appreciate the opportunity to spend some time here with you and connect with you and hopefully connect with your listeners as well. So thank you.
So I wanted to ask you to begin, as I always do, to tell us your background and education, training, how the early traumatic experiences led to your awakening. So please share about that.
Okay. My background and certainly my education was not, academia, but I feel like I hold 5 PhDs in life, 101. My early background, just to give you a brief overview here, I was born into a family that had lost tremendous wealth, middle child, one of 7 children. My father was a Greek immigrant, and I really believe that my father had really no command of the English language at all, and in many ways I think he was almost literate, not that he wasn't intelligent in other ways, but he really just simply couldn't read and couldn't write. And because of that, he was also a compulsive gambler. And I had a Uncle Gus, who was a Greek shipping tycoon, and my father ended up inheriting a vast fortune when my uncle died. And he would gamble it away. He thought stocks and bonds were just useless pieces of paper. I mean, my mother caught him burning them one time in the fireplace. And he was grandiose, you know, in many ways. He would light a cigar with a $100 bill or just tip outrageous amounts of money. And my mother simply couldn't cope with it. And when the bill collectors started coming, I always say it was the bill collectors really that and the shame that drove my father out of town. So my mother was left with 7 children to raise and no money. It was tremendous poverty. I always say I think we made the Grapes of Wrath look like they had won the lotto at, you know, a couple of points. There were points where we were burning shoes and leaves, and you know, it was hard. And she lost the house for I think it was only 1 or 2 mortgage payments left. She took in a boarder, and he lived in the root cellar like a troll. I always say he lived in there like a troll because it was like that. And it was over a period of a year that I was repeatedly raped and very violently by him. And I repressed all of the memories except one. And I had a very, very specifically clear memory up to a certain point. But when an actual rape was about to take place, it was like watching a television screen turn to snow when it gets off the channel. And my siblings would remember things that I didn't remember. They'd say, you know, don't you remember? I'd say, no. And they'd say, come on, you remember. And I'd say, no. And I really didn't. I didn't remember. So much of my childhood was like being caught in a fog. My mother was not a bad person by any means. She just simply couldn't cope. And at that point, her alcoholism was pretty much out of control. And so what happened was we had lost the house, and then we moved into another home that we had rented, and we were off working in the bean fields, and our landlord poisoned our dog and set our house on fire. And then that moved us to California, Anderson, which I think was almost the height of the poverty. That's where things were just, don't think they could have ever gotten worse. But during that, you know, during that period there, I just felt, Erica, like my whole psyche had been just soaked in melancholy. I couldn't explain it any other way. I just didn't have memory of things, and I just wanted to go home. I wanted to go home, and I felt like home was to being connected to the greater all, being connected to God, although I thought God was a real creep if he could have allowed that to happen. And that was, I really did. I just thought he was a real creep. I didn't understand it, but in my heart, my earliest memory was looking up at the stars at night. I was about 2 years old and looking at the stars and wanting to go home, and I didn't know how to get there. And I just felt like I was millions and millions of miles away. I felt so homesick and wanting to get back. So those feelings of being deeply depressed or suicidal, and then suffice it to say that I ended up dropping out of school. I had a child when I was 17. My relationships were not good, although he was my, you know, he was my first love, but it didn't work out. So I'm going to fast forward to 1979, which was my pivotal moment in life. And in 1979, I had 3 crises hit within 24 hours. Each one was big in itself. And it was enough to, it was that added piece of straw that broke the camel's back, and it brought me to my knees.
Mm-hmm.
Because I just really felt if life was hurting that bad, then the cause had to lie within me. And that was the pivotal statement, the cause has to lie within me. And suffice it to say, tell the truth and the truth will set you free. When I did that, and I had to do that with my daughter, I needed to let her know why I was the way I was. I was removed. I didn't let anyone in to touch my heart. I was a control freak through myself and my work with Revlon. I was working as a, you know, in sales and with Revlon at the time, but in the corporate world. However, with that experience, I had an epiphany when I told my daughter the truth, and I remember asking God, I remember saying, if you were out there, and if you really exist, you have to be every word that comes out of my mouth and help me reach her, because if life hurts this bad, the cause lies within me. When I said that, I had an epiphany, and I saw this pool of looked like black sludge, and I knew that was everything that I had created, the way that I had treated life, basically. And then at the same time, I had, when I said, oh my God, I understand. And what I understood was that life had no choice but to come back so that I would experience what I had been putting the rest of life through. And that was, what goes around comes around. Now, I had never, ever, you know, I never, ever abused my daughter, and I loved her, but I couldn't show it, really. I just couldn't let, I was just removed. I don't know how else to say it. You know, I just had a wall around me. And when I had that epiphany, the moment I had that epiphany, that pool of sludge, and that was a vision, turned crystal and clear, and then at that exact moment there was a golden ray that came into my front room and dusted everything with gold. Everything was dusted with gold. I didn't know what was happening, and that was the pivotal and the turning point. From that point, metaphysically, I took off like a rocket ship psychically. I was introduced to the Saint Germain teachings, the I Am presence. I was introduced to those teachings, and I think that was probably about a month later that somebody gave me those three books and said, you're ready for this. And I cried like a baby because I knew it was everything I felt in my heart that I could never find verbalized, but I also knew that I was willing to do absolutely anything to turn my life around, because I have always known innately, Erica, that life was not meant to be lived with a lot of pain. It just wasn't. So that was...
All right, so I have a question.
Yes.
I have a question for you about that. That, mm-hmm. you know, you were a child. I mean, what could you have done differently? How could you have handled your life differently with what the terror and the rape?
Well, I don't think I could have. I think I did what I did, but what I also, and I didn't, at that point, I didn't have memory yet. Okay, that exploration was going to happen down the road. I didn't have memory of that yet, but I just understood that my, let me back up. The way I viewed life as a child, okay, and I always say it was like looking through a pair of glasses that had butter smeared on them. And so the way that I viewed my relationships, you know, with people or whatever was distorted because of my experiences as a child that I had not explored yet. But they colored every part of my life. They colored every part of my mm-hmm. life. And I think as children, anytime you experience something like that, now I cannot speak for other people, I'm only speaking for myself here, but I feel like I know this journey really well. I know the healing of this journey really well. And I feel that you do what you have to do as a child to survive. You do. And it wasn't that my home was without love, because you know, my siblings and I, we were able to laugh and to play about so many things. We really were. And I know my mother loved me, but she was also in a state of denial, and she was, at that point, very steeped in her alcoholism. So I think as a kid, you do what you have to do to survive. But when you get older, for me, And that pivotal moment, 1979, it didn't work anymore. It didn't work. And I had a choice. I had a defining choice to make. And I believe that we find ourselves many times in life kind of backed up to a corner where we don't have an eighth of an inch to turn. We have to face ourselves and look at that. And so that one pivotal moment, it switched everything. It turned everything upside down. I thought I was dying, and in many ways I was. But it was like a rebirth of my connection inward, and that was worth it all.
And that is so beautiful. And I was just talking to you right at the beginning about the opposite happening to people that I happen to have seen recently, a few relatives of mine, where their life was kind of smooth and easy. They didn't really face life, but life was fine. And then I have a cousin who had a stroke. She had several strokes and was paralyzed on one side, and she was angry for the rest of the time she was here, and not nice to people and turning on people. She didn't face herself. It seems like it may be much harder if you live your whole life, you know, not facing things, but everything's okay, and then suddenly it's not. What you experienced, you know, you had the awakening early enough that you could really change for the rest of your life.
Yes, and that moment, yes, and that was so pivotal for me, because I remember as a teenager that I would go sit by this covered bridge that we have here, and I would write. I would just write, and it was at that moment that I would feel a sense of peace and tranquility, as short-lived as it was. But I always said to myself, you know, if there is this presence of, or if God really exists, it has to be more like this feeling that I'm feeling right now, because there was nothing in it that felt angry or fearful or judgmental, not at that exact moment. There was just the sound of the water, the tranquility of nature. And that's when I thought, God has to be closer to this, whatever that is. So that left me with a feeling that there is something beyond. And also, the night we buried my father, he appeared in the bedroom. And I don't see spirit like a wispy apparition. I see spirit like Patrick Swayze and Ghost. Okay, I see him mm-hmm. that clear. And that also left me with a feeling, well, there has to be something beyond this. So now, to answer your question about sometimes you observe, and I certainly know what you're talking about. I've observed people, and it just seems that their life goes on this one kind of smooth, linear lane. You know, everybody's got their ups and downs, mm-hmm. but it seems like not like being hit by the cosmic hammer or tumbling over these experiences one after another. But what I read recently, and it really made sense to me, that many times people will come in and this is kind of a resting life for them. And that made sense to me, a resting life. Maybe they had one that was pretty challenging in a prior, and so this one could be more of a resting where they don't want or they don't desire to be challenged left and right. And it also makes me flash back now or to where I started the book, and this was under hypnosis with a psychotherapist, which we used hypnosis as the tool for exploration because my defenses were so strong. But I would go under so deep, and I remember Dr. Slavin telling me one time, he says, your soul takes you where you need to go, which was so true. But I remember going on to the spirit side. And if I could explain to your listening audience, which I can't, the feeling of love and the feeling of safety and the feeling, it was such an astute feeling of awareness, pure consciousness, nothing but pure consciousness. And I was surrounded by these masters and teachers, and they were showing me where I was going to be going, and they were showing me, almost like on this huge film strip, what some of my opportunities were going to be in life. And it would be like on this film strip, it was like they threw this film strip out, and I could see like these high rises coming out of a frame, and they looked like big cement blockages, but I knew symbolically that was going to be a major growth experience of some sort. And then maybe there was a resting piece in between. And then there was another high rise of blockages that would come up. Maybe that looked like it was 15, 20 miles down. And I knew that space in between was to get my equilibrium back so I could move on to the next one. I knew that in spirit. And I just remember this feeling of feeling overwhelmed. It's like, oh my God, how am I going to survive this? It just seems like so much. But what they were showing me, Erica, and I thought this was so important because this is pivotal. What they were showing me is they were showing me what could be in this life, and they were showing me what might be in this life, but it was all going to be determined on how I perceived to learn from it. What was my choice of platform, creator or victim? And that was going to define everything.
Yeah.
And if I was sitting across from you right now, and if I pulled on your arm, your forearm, and kind of gave it a little jerk, that's what it felt like when I had to come in. I knew I had to go. It was time to be born. And that's when I went inside my mother's womb, and it just felt like coming into this dimension was like coming into icy, dark sludge, mud. It felt that different from spirit. And I also felt her depression at being pregnant again, and the alcohol was making me sick. I remember that feeling. Long-winded.
So the moment that you discovered, you know, that you started having these memories, what was that like for you? Because you had repressed it for so long, and this is very common. I know I worked with Dr. John Upledger with craniosacral therapy, and he had a Vietnam vet in the middle of the room with all of us watching who just had a recovered memory of that, and it's intense.
Well, it is intense, and when I first, here's how naive I was. When I first went to see Dr. Slavin, I thought, okay, well, you know, I'll just get hypnotized, remember this thing, and then it'll be a done deal. Well, it didn't work that way. Because it's a process. It is a process. Healing is a process. That's something that I really learned, and I'd love to touch base on that. But when he put me under, I went under so deeply. And all of this, also, something told me to record those sessions. So all of these sessions are in my book. They're taken from tape.
Wow.
In my book with Dr. Slavin. Those are all word for word. It's like following the bouncing ball. And that, of course, is walking between worlds. But when he put me under, that's when I went back. And he said there's a word for it. I'm not sure, but it means going into the deepest state of trance possible. And so that was what I experienced with that. But I also told him that I felt like, if I was here, I survived it already. Okay, I'm here. I survived it. I want to go back and clean it up. So let me go back and really clean it up. And I always say, Erica, it was a collaboration between his higher self, my higher self, our spiritual guides, because I always prayed every time I went in there. I would say, guide me, help me heal, help me heal. And I really believe that they did. And so I would go under incredibly deep. And so I remembered them in full totality. And I also experienced projecting out of the body and watching and observing. And that's very common. And
So I have another question.
Sure.
Some people don't want to go deeply like that. And you were really successful being a makeup artist and were doing fine. So would it have been better in some way for you to never really face that? and
no.
just go on living? Why?
No.
What's the difference?
Because I wasn't living. That's the difference. I wasn't living. I felt like I was numb. I felt like I was dead. You know, and I'm not saying that this is the right path for everybody. I'm just speaking of my own experience. But what I will say to anybody that's listening that has had any kind of hurt, you know, if you've been hurt and you can't let go of it, or if you've had trauma, whether it's abusive or sexual or bullying or whatever, and it has a way of always catapulting the consciousness out of being present. I either lived in the future or I lived in the past around other events, but
mm-hmm.
I was never present. I was never present. So it's a big N-O underscored exclamation marks. I'm so glad I went and did the work because it's freeing. I don't carry that with me. If anyone has experienced something, and if there is part of you, and I'm just going to speak to the heart of anybody out here right now who may be listening to my words here. First of all, I'm sending you light and empathy and compassion. But I also know that when that inner tug starts to pull on you, when you begin to feel that life has more to offer, then know that the courage in you, the strength in you, all those qualities that are good and caring and the love, the caring, your generosity of spirit, any good quality like that is God within you. That's the God presence within you. And that presence of light can pull you through because your light is stronger than any shadow. Shadows hide. Shadows distort. But that light is healing. And please hear this part. Find a qualified therapist. Don't turn it over to just anybody. Find somebody that you're aligned with. And know that it's a process. It doesn't happen overnight. Of course you're going to cry if you're doing some work. It doesn't have to go to the extreme that I did. But you'll cry. You'll get angry. You'll probably experience rage. I sure did. And then victimhood. But it moves into phases. Healing has a phase to it. And you'll move in from one phase to another. Let that phase have its own time and its own space, and then it'll move into grieving and loss and then acceptance. And then eventually I was able to cross the bridge from victimhood, and I was able to truly forgive from my heart and not my head. So I would just say those would be my words to you.
What was that part? Yeah, what was that part like for you to reach that point? You must have been blaming them and angry at them for hurting you. So what was it like to shift?
Okay, well, the shift came. Well, and I always said, how does a body hold so many tears? Where do they come from? I used to ask myself,
mm-hmm.
where in God's name do all these tears come from? Because it seemed like I couldn't stop crying, or other people couldn't understand why I was doing this. Well, the way I feel today is why I did it. You know, I'm not connected to that anymore. Now the shift from, let me speak about the being angry. Yeah, you bet I was angry, and I was angry at my mother for not protecting me. That's who
mm-hmm.
I was really angry at, because she was the one who was supposed to protect me. And so when my mother made her transition, I had not resolved anything with her at that point. I was still angry. And then after her transition, then I began to shift. And I began to reflect more on her qualities. I began to grow into another level of compassion. And because I started looking back at that experience of being on the spirit side and feeling that love and that awareness, and then thinking how she must have felt, because I was told by a medium that she wept much in her slumber, that she wanted to go back and live her life backwards as an opportunity. because mm-hmm. I think it's a horrible feeling if we feel like we've missed the mark on something. And I know, I thought, I don't want her to feel that way. I don't want her to feel that way. I know how I feel about my own self-judgment and being hard on myself. I know what that feels like. And so I went to her grave, and I was able to truly forgive my mother from my heart and not my head. And I also love this. This is, and I'm not sure. I believe this was Course of Miracles. I'm not sure. But it said forgiveness, or to forgive backwards, means give for those incapable of giving. Give for. And looking back, I don't know whether I could have done any better at her age with 7 kids to support, minimum wage. I don't know whether I could have done any better. I'd give anything if my mom was alive now. We'd have so much in common.
Yeah, we
so much in common.
We can be so judgmental. That's one of the things. Judgmental,
yeah.
And expecting and not compassionate, even for our own parents, maybe especially for our parents. So how did this affect your relationship with your daughter?
Well, my daughter and I have a really good relationship now, and she's had, you know, bless her heart, she's had almost like 40 years of me being conscious. And of course I would love to go back and bring all of those years back, but she also, I think she's an amazing woman and an amazing mother, and you know, she's always looked at it differently than I. I've always beaten myself up more at what I wasn't, but then I had to stop recently and say, oh my God, would she be who she is today? You know, if experiences were different. I was an unwed mother at 17 years old, and in 1964, a time when that was a complete social taboo. And, you know, her father and I never got married, and I was just filled with resentment and rage over that. And, you know, I just was removed. And a lot of, you know, there were areas I felt like I was a good mother, and then other areas where I was just removed. But we have a good relationship now. And I can't go back and bring those years back, but we can move forward where there's a new platform. Honesty is clarity, and without honesty and clarity, intimacy cannot exist. Some wise words from Dr. People.
But what's beautiful is that you have all this time, that you were able to do this earlier in life. But even for people that are on their deathbed, if they take the little time they have left to share love and to come to that realization, it's healing for everyone involved.
Yes, it is. And the other thing that was very healing for me was letting go of victimhood. And that was scary because I really thought,
mm-hmm.
okay, what will I blame? And this is what I really had to come to terms with. What will I blame my inadequacies on? For either not being present, not doing this, not doing that. I can't blame that on him, you know, the rapist, or her, or circumstance, or my childhood. To take
mm-hmm.
responsibility of where I am now on my path, I always say I'm too conscious to be unconscious and too aware to be unaware. And what really helped me shift, and this may be a tool that might help another one of your listeners shift, if you're going through something and you have a hard time letting go of it, the earth is a school, and our experiences in life are our school books. And if a problem continues to come at you over and over again and becomes a stumbling block, well, it's handing you that again. To rework it again. One of the things that I found incredibly helpful, if you get a journal and you write at it whatever the experience is, maybe it's a divorce, maybe it's a messy divorce, or it's a breakup, how has this experience helped me grow? What have I learned
mm-hmm.
from it? How has it helped my soul? Because in doing that, you're going to take ownership of it, and that way you can transform the experience much more quickly. If it is involving a relationship, so maybe, and this is something from my wonderful mystical muse, Dr. Peoples, so let's put at the top of the table, or the top of the journal, just set a table there, and then you would write, what attracted me to this person in the first place? And maybe write down 6 or 9 paragraphs. Within each one of those paragraphs, you're going to have a gem. You're going to find a gem. So let's say you have 9 gems. So extract those gems from each paragraph and write them into a 1 or 2 page essay. Now, you can do a couple things. You can read that a couple of times. You can share it with someone if you feel like you can be naked and vulnerable enough there. That's always scary, but it's powerful. And if not, you know, maybe go someplace that's safe where you can burn it at sunset. Equally important, be there at sunrise. New beginning. A new beginning. Mm. So it's been a process.
One last.
Yeah.
That was wonderful. I have one final question, and that is,
sure,
you talk about piercing the veil and having a window into other worlds. So please,
yes,
explain that.
Well, I've always wanted answers. You know, I've always said I haven't just asked. I've used a battering ram. Why am I here? What's it about? Who am I? And because I've been so insistent with that, and I believe that some of these abilities, these psychic abilities, or the ability to be able to see into other worlds, see different vibrations, and to see them very clearly, simply has been part of my journey back home. That's the way I look at it. And one of my favorite statements is, to believe is to see. I don't need it. I don't do it the other way around. I don't have to have something proven to me. If I see it, if I feel it, then that's enough. And I think the natural curiosity absolutely will present a thread to you that you can begin to pull on, and I will always pull on that thread. But I also believe it's just simply been part of my journey back home. It truly has, you know, looking through windows into the other world, seeing spirits and helping them cross over, and seeing tree elementals, you know, step out of trees, and seeing the cohesive continuum through energy that's connected from every blade of grass, you know, consciousness. And we're just part of that pure consciousness of God. And I think it's a natural evolution. And I was looking at the word evolve. Really, it's like love, add a V-E on it on the other end. And the more we evolve, the more we love. The more we love, the more we evolve. And I think we're all here to make that connection to our divine presence, the I am that I am, and that all of these steps, all of this healing is taking you home. So if you can look at it in that light and remember, this too shall pass, it will not last forever. And your light can outshine any shadow in your world.
That's just beautiful. So please tell us how people can contact you. Do you have any courses coming up, and how can they get your book? Just share a little bit.
Sure. Well, the book, again, is filled with all of my experiences, and it's raw, and it's vulnerable, and again, it's filled with so many of these tapes from these journeys that I had recorded at the time, not knowing I was going to put it in the book. They can order the book. It's available in any bookstore. They can order it through any bookstore. And also through Amazon at Walking Between Worlds. Walking Between Worlds, A Spiritual Odyssey by Athena Demetrius. My website is iamimwithin.com, and you can always reach me there through my website, and I do private sessions with Dr. Peoples all the time, and record those as an MP3 and send it off. And that's really my joy. I also work with people on the IM Discourses by Saint Germain. So I do some work with that. And my greatest joy is really connecting people to that beautiful inner light within, you know, their own being, because we're all part of that presence. We're all God in action. We really are. And we're just here to remember.
Please explain, who is Dr. Peebles?
Oh, Dr. Peebles. Well, Dr. Peebles was a 19th century spiritual philosopher, and he was one of the true spiritualists. And he was amazing. He is someone that I channel. I've been channeling the doc for about 25, 28 years now. And he states that we worked together in my last lifetime on the East Coast with him. My name was Mary Longley, and we have absolute documentation of that. And Dr. Peebles was on the East Coast, and he also traveled around the world five times, which is something, in the late 1800s and early part of the 20th century. And he traveled around the world and brought spirituality to different parts of the world. And so he works with people in a very pleasant and just beautiful way. He's very compassionate. He's very, very loving, but he's very wise. And he's got a great sense of humor. And usually when I'm contacted, people are at a point of a lot of transition going on in their life. They can feel confused. They can feel lost. That's normal. And that's usually when my phone rings. And he always says that, well, okay, so if I was doing a session for you, Erica, he would say, okay, this is what Erica's soul wants her to become aware of now. And so many times, you know, when we're feeling really bad and judging ourselves and saying that spirit is, you know, going to be shaking a finger at us, sometimes they're congratulating us because we're moving into a place we didn't want to look at, which is going to be more growth. And so he really helps people that way, and he's very, very loving. So that's part of my joy.
And so much is the perspective. So we're coming to the end, so I really want to thank you so much for participating in my show today.
Well, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed, the questions, and also I always feel like on some level, you know, connecting up with people, and again, you know, just know that your light can outshine any shadow in your world. It truly can. And sending people light and love.
I love that. Well, thank you again, Athena Demetrius. It was a pleasure.
Oh, you're so welcome. You have a blessed day. Okay. Take care.
And you too.
Okay. Bye-bye.
And I'm your... Bye-bye. And I'm your host, Dr. Erica Goodstone, saying goodbye for now. Please visit my website, drericagoodstone.com, and apply for a complimentary Healing Through Love session. I look forward to speaking to you again soon.